Let us thank our sponsors, the Sosneys. Gabe and Aliza are sponsoring in memory of Le'ilui Nishmas, his father, forgot his name.
Zalman,
that's right. But what's his, I don't think we had his full name on the, was it on here?
No.
No, it's not on the full name is not on, but Le'ilui Nishmas Zalman Sosney, Emir Hashem, our learning should be Le'ilui Nishmaso, the elevation of his soul. So let's jump right in here. Mishlei Yud Aleph, Mishlei 11, Proverbs 11. You'll notice here, for the first time, in a positive way, we talk about what seems to be a woman. Although I can't really understand what it means. It's nothing necessarily about a woman per se. It's really just a turn of phrase, it seems like. But you might know that Esh Eschayil comes from the end of Mishlei, so something to look forward to in a couple years when we get to the end of it. But the
posted anything yet, have you?
I think I did. Pretty sure I did.
Last time was 11 to 15.
This time is 16 to 22. Should be there.
Oh, just now it got on.
Yeah, I don't know. I did about my usual time, about 10 minutes ago. But either way, so the pasuk says here, Eisha Schein Tismuch Kava. We're in Mishlei Yud Aleph Tezayin, 11:16. Eisha Schein Tismuch Kava. The word titmoch is a very interesting word. We've used it before, but in different ways. Here, it could mean support. It could mean to beget. It could mean to lean on. Here in the Art Scroll, it translates it as, on the next page, translates it as
dignity, and that's above
his insolence. A woman of grace upholds honor, upholds to continue to maintain. Here it says in Sepharia, it says a graceful woman obtains honor. Okay, that's a little bit of a different translation. I mean, the whole phrase changes when you say it like that. Then the end of the pasuk, va'aritzim yismichu osher. Again, the word yitmichu, a ruthless man. Right, aritzim is the operative word here. It's very difficult to translate, but we'll see in a second from the Sefer David. A ruthless man obtains wealth. Okay, and here it also says upholds wealth. Meaning, what? According to the Art Scroll, the translation is, what does the person value? According to Sepharia, it's about what does the person strive for or seek. So in this case, let's look at the Mitzvot David, if those of you who have it. So the Mitzvot David says, Eisha Schein, Isha Hanose Schein Ba'avor Kishron Mahaseha. Why is it that she has honor or has grace? Why do people look upon her positively? Because she does good things, right? That's Eisha Schein. She's a person that that people know of as being kind, as being doing good deeds. So for that type of person in Eisha Schein, again, the Mitzvot Zavon really doesn't talk about why Shlomo HaMelech is using the phrase Eisha Schein. It doesn't really make much of a difference according to this concept. But she has good deeds, Darka Lismoch Es Hakavod, and therefore she sort of leans on, she supports her own honor by doing what? Shelo Telech Mimana Ve'osa Smichos El Hakavod Ve'osafas Kishron Ma'asim. So he really reads the whole thing into the pasuk, but that this woman who has chayin from her good deeds will continue to feed that chayin. Meaning for the person, and this is how I understand it. Let's look at the next part of the pasuk, because I think the next part of the pasuk will actually be very indicative about the first part. Va'aritzim, right? This is according to the Mishlei, according to Shlomo Melech, according to the Mitzvot David. Ba'alei koach. Those who have strength, they're, I don't know if it means aggressive, or people who have power. Rav darkam, koach rav, I think the bali koach rav, darkam aso smuchos el haosher. They always try to continue to maintain their wealth, levaya avud mehem, so that they can never be lost from their wealth. So when you look at these two phrases, you see one, you see obviously a focus on wealth versus a focus on honor. But there's another thing going on here, at least according to the Mitzvot David. According to the woman who has chen, meaning the woman who does good deeds. So what does she continually do? She continues to maintain that chain by doing the good things, right? She keeps doing good things, and naturally she'll have kavod, according to the Mesir HaSavid. And then on the flip side, the person who has this power, so he's looking for osher, he's looking for wealth, and he's going to continue trying to get wealth, meaning that for the woman, she is maintaining something, and for the powerful, they have to continuously amass something. Meaning the woman is already chen, right? That's part of who she is. And she'll continue being that way, and she'll continue to get kavod. But the person who's powerful, it could be lost. Meaning it's tangible, it's possible, it's non-expendable. Right? A person who has their character is a certain way, so then they'll naturally just continue being that way. That's who they are. But the person who's only going to be powerful based on their wealth, so they have to continuously try to make sure that they keep having wealth. So it's sort of like a rat race, as opposed to just continuing to be a good person. Interesting, it's a very difficult pasuk to figure out, but that's how the Mesir HaSavid says it. And, you know, not too many chidushim there. I'm sure I could have dug into more of it and try to figure it out more. But at least according to the Mesir HaSavid, so what it's really talking about is a person's own image, right? And it, according to the way I've said it, a woman who is trying to obtain honor in the way that the Sefaria, I don't like how the Sefaria translates that way. I like how the art scroll translates it more. A woman of grace upholds honor, meaning it continues. The reason I like that more is because it's not something that she's trying to do. As opposed to aritzim, as I said before, you have to actively try to get it. You won't just end up with wealth. You have to actively try to get it. And sort of to go a little bit of a step further, what I'm trying to say is that you don't have to try to if you're a good person. If you're a good person, it's not like something you have to actively try to do. If you're a good person, that's just who you are. You just naturally exude that chen that the pasuk's talking about. If, however, you're a person who is trying to get money, so you're always going to have to look for the next scheme, you're going to look for the next client, you're going to look for the next business that's going to give you more money. And just that distinction, the something that comes naturally versus something that is an active pursuit, so reminded me of a conversation I once had with a mentor of mine. I think this was before I even thought I was going to be a rabbi, but it happened to be that he was a rabbinic mentor that ended up being my rabbinic mentor once I was a rabbi. But he gave me some kind of compliment. I forgot what it was. He said that I did something nicely, right? I don't know if I spoke or I taught or I did something. And he said, you did that very well. And in response, I said, thank you, I try. And he said back to that phrase, if you'd be trying, it wouldn't be so great. Meaning the reason he liked what I was doing is because it was a natural thing. If I was trying and sort of acting or pretending or making some kind of act out of it, so that would be a problem. And I think that's what the Mesir HaSavid was getting at here. Right, Isha noses chen bavor kishron masad darka lisma. The way she goes, right, she tends to do lisma chasakavod shalotech menav oses smichas alkavod hasavas kishron masim. She's just going to keep doing good things, as opposed to the haritzim, right? These people of power, they continue to have to also smichos el haosher, right? It's not really that clear, but that's how I thought of it at least. Mishle yud alav yud zayin. 11:17. I find this pasuk to be also ambiguous, but the way at least Rabbeinu Yonah teaches us is very, I think, informative, insightful, and I guess counterintuitive for the times we live in. The pasuk says, "Gomel nafsho ish chased, ve'ocher she'ero achzari." A kind person, gomel nafsho ish chased. A kind person benefits himself. V'ocher she'ero, a cruel person makes trouble for himself. So this is a bit of a wordplay here from Shlomo Melech. Nefesh and She'er both connote a certain self indicator, meaning it indicates that you're talking about yourself, right? The word She'er is used in a bunch of different ways in the Torah, but the Rashi tells us that it's referring to relatives. Both nafsho, the person's nefesh, their soul, could be referring to those people who they're related to, but also She'er, we know, also refers to krovav, Rashi says, to relatives. But Rabbeinu Yonah says it's more literal than that. Gomel nafsho ish chesed, says Rabbeinu Yonah, ish chesed magdil nafsho behergel uvemidos emtzaios. Rabbeinu Yonah says that a person who is kind is going to make themselves, is going to help themselves, magdil nafsho, is going to grow their soul, whatever that means, going to grow themselves by doing good things. Hergel tov midos emtzaios. And with balanced character traits. What does that mean? Kasher yigadel es aguf hakatan. Just like yagdil. Just like you would raise a small body. Right? I guess a small person, meaning a child. Ader kigmola yimol kigmola nafshi. We quotes from Tehillim that says, just like my mother raised me, so too I'm raising my soul. What does that mean? The balance that he's talking about for the kind person. You do things that are going to distance yourselves from just succumbing to desire, but also you satiate your body enough that it's going to be sustained. On the flip side, v'ocher she'ero achzari, mishehu ocher gufo umariv umesagef atzmo, yikra yikarei achzari. But somebody who disgusts their body and starves themselves, and mesagef could be like you pain yourself, you give yourself lashes or something like that, yikarei achzari, he'll be cruel. Just like someone who's cruel to another person is considered achzar. Ki ba'achiras haguf, because with the disgusting, or I don't know if disgusting is the right word here, but troubling, as the Svari quotes, as far as and Art Scroll both say, troubling, he who troubles themselves, ki ba'achiras haguf, who he who troubles his body, his flesh, yifsidu kochos hanefesh, you will lose the energy or the strength of your soul. V'yashchi suha mimlachta, and you're going to destroy it from its activities, from its work, from its labors. V'lo titzlach l'chach mavlavodas Hashem Yisbarach. And thereby you're not going to be successful with the wisdom and the service of Hashem. And this is, I think, what he means also in the second. The second paragraph doesn't seem very different from the first. But basically he's saying, hold on, let me just see this for a second. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how this is different. He says that this is a different phrase, but a different understanding, but it sounds the same to me. Hatavas ha'adam l'nafsho b'chalal derech ha'chesedhu. Someone who does good things to themselves, for themselves, is also considered chesed. It's also considered kindness to do something good for yourself. Why? They're doing it for the sake of their own health, to sustain their own health. You get rewarded for taking care of yourself. If your intention is, if when you're taking care of yourself, you're doing so for the sake of your own health, not for the sake of your desires. V'ocher she'ero achzari, and someone who doesn't do that, is considered cruel. This reminded me of a very important idea that, to be honest, I never read inside, but it comes from a book which is, according to some, controversial, but I don't think it should be, and I'm not sure why it would be. Well, I know why people say it would be. We're not going to get into that. It's a book called 12 Rules of Life, I think that's what it's called, by Jordan Peterson. And I started reading it, to be honest, but it's a little too dense. I typically listen to books. All the books I typically tell you about, I listen to them because I just can't read. I bore myself when I read words. I have to hear somebody saying them with emotion and whatever. At least English books. People think it's strange, but I read Hebrew books better than I read English books. I just can't. I don't know. It's weird. I can skim English, but I can't read. And especially for a book like that, it's very dense with the studies and the ways he talks about them. So it's hard for me to read them. But even when I listen, and therefore when I listen to them, I usually listen to them in the car or I'm doing something else, multitasking. And the book was too dense for me to actually get through just by listening to it. The other book that I quote a lot, which I keep trying to finish, but it's also too dense for me to get through, is the book by Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow, which I've quoted a few times in this class. It's very dense. It's like a textbook. But it's not like the Heath books, which are like just enjoyable, like quick reads and whatever. But but Jordan Peterson talks in that book about something I've heard him actually talk about. And I don't have the book myself, so I can't quote directly from you, from it. But this is apparently a quote from the book that I got from someone else, somewhere else, where he says, imagine 100 people are prescribed a drug, right? And this is based on the statistics, bear this out. If 100 people are prescribed a drug, 1/3 of them won't even fill the prescription, meaning 33 people won't fill the prescription. Half of the remaining 67 will fill it, but won't even take the medication correctly. They'll miss doses. They'll quit taking it out of the cabinet, I guess. They might not even take it at all. Why is this? Physicians and pharmacists tend to blame the patients, right? The doctor will say, well, you didn't do the right thing. Psychologists tend to put the blame on themselves, that the people themselves I'm not sure what that means. Meaning the psychologists, I guess the doctors will say that they didn't encourage it or make it clear enough that they were supposed to take the medicine. This rule, we're going to explore why people, this rule meaning that I forgot what number rule this is in the book. We're going to explore why people tend to take care of others and their pets much better than they take care of themselves. This is his rule. People are better at feeling and properly administering prescription medication to their pets than to themselves. That's not good. That's how Jordan Peterson talks. Even from your pet's perspective, it's not good. Your pet probably loves you and would be happier if you took your medication. If you're alive, if you're healthy, it's difficult to conclude anything from this set of facts except that people appear to love their dogs, cats, ferrets, and birds more than themselves. How horrible is that? How much shame must exist for something like that to be true? What could it be about the people that makes them prefer their pets to themselves? It's an interesting take. I'm not sure, 100% sure if those are the only elements in the equation. But this rule basically says, take care of yourself as well as you take care of somebody else. And it's a striking concept because you think typically, v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, right? That's saying the opposite. The Svas Emes apparently says, I've never been able to find it. If somebody could find the Svas Emes, I'd be so happy. I've heard it quoted and I love it, but I can't find it anywhere. That when Hashem says, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, Svas Emes tells us, if Hashem is saying that you have to love someone else like you love yourself, it must be that you're obligated to love yourself. I've never seen that inside. But I heard it quoted from Dr. David Pelkovitz, I believe. If those of you know David Pelkovitz, all psychologists, done unbelievable things during COVID too, for rabbis, for clients, etc. But either way, so the Svas Emes is echoed by this concept, I think, in Mishlei. But what Jordan Peterson talks about, which is we tend to, although it might sound counterintuitive, we tend to take care of other people more than ourselves. For whatever reason, right? We think that maybe we can do without it, or we have a greater motivation to impress another person. Some of the things that Jordan Peterson doesn't talk about. But the point is, and this is true, I definitely find it in my life. I don't know if it's a personality thing, if different people have different things. Even selfish people, when it comes to doing the right thing for themselves, will do that right thing for somebody else, but they won't do it for themselves, right? I don't know if you've ever heard of, What's the concept? There's a social, the psychology concept. I'll tell you a story. I don't know what it's called. I'll tell you a story. I think it's called, no, I can't figure it out. It's like, to take yourself out of the equation, to externalize maybe. I forgot what it is. But I'll tell you a story that I heard from David Pelkovitz at a completely different time. He wasn't talking about this. David Pelkovitz once told a group that I was in that he was once talking to, I think it was a father. And this guy was in what's called, people at Young Israel don't know of this thing, but this person was in what's called a kiddush club. A kiddush club is a group of people at shul that like to drink together. And at least in other shuls, that happens during davening. Somebody came to me, I think it was like the first week I was here. I guess they try this on other rabbis too. The first week I was here, someone asked me, Rabbi, can we have a kiddush club? Just me and a couple of guys. And I said, well, first of all, thank you for asking me. And second of all, if you would like to do it, you cannot do it during davening, and it has to be private so nobody else can see. It has to be after davening, like a regular kiddush. I don't think it ever happened, at least not to my knowledge. But I mean, I know people drink in the shul. Obviously, people drink in the shul. We have things here and there, but this guy came to. I told this story to David Pelkovitz, and the story went like this: He was at a baseball game with his son, and the people right in front of them. People right in front of them were drinking at the baseball game, and they were getting very, you know, riotous, and they were getting out of hand. And the guy thought to himself, oh, this is a teaching moment. I'm going to teach my son about the perils of drinking. And he says to his son, son, this is what happens when you drink. You should never drink. This is what happens. This is what you look like. And the son looks at his dad and he says, I know, that's what you look like during Kiddush Club. And at that moment, the father said, okay, that's it. I'm not doing Kiddush Club anymore. Because he was able to externalize onto somebody else what he was doing himself. When he would see it in somebody else, he noticed how bad it was for himself. But it wasn't until you saw it on somebody else that you could actually understand it for yourself. And the same thing is true with a lot of things. It's only once we find somebody else in the same exact situation that we're in that we say to them, you have to do this for your own good. And then they'll look back at us and say, well, you don't do that. And you do the same problematic behavior. And that's because we treat other people much better than we treat ourselves. We think about and try to help other people because we don't have the biases that hold us back from whatever we're doing. We don't have the desire triggers that hold us back from overcoming this or that. But when we see it in somebody else, so it's very easy to decide what that person should be doing. Right, the equation is much easier, but when it comes to taking care of ourselves, we can't do it as well. And I think this is something which is counterintuitive because we live in a world, right? Every rabbi at some point in, you know, a year span talks about the I generation, right? iPad, iMac, iPod, iPhone, right? Everything, the I generation, right? That's the line right now. But the truth is that even in the I generation, even in this time where people are focusing a lot on themselves, it seems to be that this concept is even more relevant. People are taking care of themselves less because when it comes to focusing on themselves, they're focusing on themselves in type of feeding their desires, not in type of being, you know, taking care of themselves, but in the kind of, you know, self-centeredness which is going to only exacerbate their own desires and instincts. So when the Rabbeinu Yonah says this, I thought of this line in Jordan Peterson, because Jordan Peterson, if those are familiar, it seems like Michael might know him a little bit, that Jordan Peterson is well known for taking people out of their addictions by empowering them. Not by breaking them down, but by telling them that they can control their own life. If you remember a long time ago, I don't know how long ago this was, we talked about another one of Jordan Peterson's rules. I forgot what the literal quote was, but it was about making your own bed, right? When you wake up in the morning, you should make your bed. And that will sort of snowball into one orderly act after another. But it's just a small step in terms of taking control of your life. So we talked about it there also, the concept of taking control over your own life. And this is in much the same vein. It's a different rule, but basically means like you're in control of your own life. And look at yourself like you would look at somebody else in your situation. It's a fascinating way to do it, and it's very hard to do. It's very hard to do. Oftentimes you need a good friend, a good parent, a good spouse, a good psychologist, a good therapist to tell you, imagine somebody else had exactly your situation. And then when you're able to figure that out, then you're able to help yourself. Just one last example of this, because I found this fascinating from a political example, but not to say anything about politics. I don't really care about politics at this stage. You know, I've sort of disconnected. I told you guys I'm trying to disconnect from politics right now. It's it doesn't help me emotionally. But the same thing happened in 2016 and 2020. And not to get into it, as I just said, but there is this polling error, right? Where did there's this concept that people are promoting called the shy Trump voter, right? You know this concept that the polls that got them all wrong. It's because the Trump voter doesn't tell the pollster that they're actually voting for Trump because maybe societal or social pressures that they don't want to admit it. It's hard for them to actually say it. But then when they get to the polls, they can do it. Right, so I saw a fascinating concept which relates to this. One pollster, which is usually discredited and apparently got it closer than other groups, said that they try to accommodate or to eliminate the shy Trump voter phenomenon by asking them not who they're going to vote for, but who their neighbors are going to vote for, because if their neighbors vote like them, so then they'll be more willing to say that their neighbor's voting for Trump than to say that they're voting for Trump. It's just a fascinating way to approach the issue. And it's the same exact thing here. You wouldn't say something about yourself in one way, but when it comes to somebody else, you would give them the harsh criticism or the difficult task to do. So just here also, thought it was relevant for the sake of Rabbeinu Yonah, because it really is a test. We don't think of it always as being a test, but Rabbeinu Yonah says, "Kefi hatzarich lekiyum habriyos ki yikabel ha'adam schar al ha'atavel anafsho." When we take care of ourselves, we're going to get rewarded for that too. Just like when we take care of other people, as long as we're doing it for the right reasons. Fascinating, Rabbeinu Yonah, concept that I don't think we talked enough about. But definitely relevant. Okay, so next pasuk, Mishle Yud Alev Yud Ches 11:18, Rasha Osa Pula Shaker Vizorayat Staka Secher Emes. It's a weird use of the word, weird form of the word schar, but that's what it means. Secher Emes. The wicked man earns illusory wages, but he who sows righteousness has true reward. So Rashi tells us this is what it means, that based on the Sefarad translation here, Pu'ulaso shel rasha mishakeres lo, that the actions of an evil person or a wicked person are lying to them. They think that what they're doing is actually going to be good for them. As Rashi says, Kisavar shetiskayim bo hatzlachaso v'kol avi. He thinks that he's going to be successful. If I do this scheme, if I do that, untoward act or false, or cheating scheme or whatever. So that's going to be good because it's going to help me be successful. It's going to help me get my wealth that we talked about before. But hakol aved, in the end of the day, it's going to all fall apart. However, zoreyat staka secher emes. V'hazoreyat staka, says Rashi, hi pu'ula shel emes ki bevande betuach u'shikav polo basof. Rashi doesn't really pick up on the wording. He just says that this is the more trustworthy activity, that staka is going to end up giving you true reward. It's not going to be false reward, and you're not going to lose it. But what I find fascinating about the imagery of Moshlomo Melech in this pasuk is Rasha Osa Pulas Shaker. He's doing these false deeds. But Zoreat Staka Secher Emes. What does Zoreat Staka mean? Zorea means you plant it, right? In the Sephardi, it translates as sow righteousness. What does it mean to plant? Sometimes doing the right thing doesn't give you immediate reward, right? To sow something, to plant something, Zorea Staka, that's going to give you lasting and true reward, right? The short, long way or the long, short way. You want to get the quick, the get-rich-quick scheme, or do you want to get the rich down the road scheme? This is the difference between a retirement fund and shorting the market or something. Do something quick, right? This is the difference between really putting in the effort for the long term versus trying to get the benefits in the short term. And almost all equations in a moral sense come down to whether or not you're willing to be Zoreat Staka. I remember once I was walking in the streets of Brooklyn and this guy stopped me, and I didn't recognize him at first. And then he told me who he was, and I said, "Oh yeah, I remember you. We were at NCSY Kollel. I was a madrich on NCSY Kollel, and this guy was from a public school, I believe in Texas somewhere, and didn't have any Jewish schools where he was from. And in the end of the day, he ended up going, I think, to an Israel program." And then this is 5 years afterwards, at least 5 years later, I think, I find him on the streets of Brooklyn. He's wearing black and white and he's going to yeshiva. And I knew him when he was just a public school kid who didn't know how to daven yet. And it was one of those moments where you find the Zoreat Staka. You're right, you plant the seeds so that later on they'll blossom, but you don't necessarily see the immediate rewards. I remember talking to him. I think I actually helped him get into yeshiva. He was trying to, it was very late. You know, NCSY Kollel happens in the summer. So when it happens in the summer, so that usually all the yeshivas are filled up by then. But this kid coming out of public school wasn't in the yeshiva, but coming from NCSY Kollel, I'm not really sure how he ended up in NCSY Kollel, but coming from public school, he didn't know much, so he didn't apply to any yeshivas. And in August, I was able to help him get into a yeshiva. I'm not really sure if it was all me, but either way, he ended up being one of these long-term beneficiaries of NCSY Kollel, and that's what I think of with Zoreat Staka. You plant the seeds for your righteousness, even though you're going to get the schar only down the road, just like a plant. Then the pasuk says, "Kain Tzedakah L'chaim." This is also an interesting phrase, just like Sechar is an interesting use of the word schar. Here also the word kain usually means yes, but it also comes from a word, I don't know if people know this or recognize this, the word Cain is associated is connected with the word Nachon. I'm pretty sure Nachon is correct, and Cain is yes, right? It makes sense. So in this pasuk, I think Cain tzedakah is a phrase unto itself, meaning true or correct tzedakah is l'chaim. Sephardi has a way different translation than this. Let me see how they say it here. Sincere charity. Okay, there you go. Kain tzedakah. Sincere charity brings life. Kain tzedakah l'chaim. Umaradev ra'a lemoso. Maradev is a tough word. Maradev usually means to chase after. Maradev ra'a lemoso. Someone who chases after evil is going to lead to death. It's kind of an interesting contrast. They don't seem to be connected to each other. Kain tzedakah l'chaim. Sincere charity is for life, and someone who chases evil is for death. Those two things are different things, right? One is sincere charity, and one is doing bad things. So what's the sincere charity coming to contrast? So if you look at the Mesudas David, so Mesudas David says, Kain tzedakah, amitas tzedakah. The truest of righteousness, or of charity, Again, the Sephardi translates it righteousness, and the Art School translates it as charity. So says the Mesudas David. Amis is like Rotsa Lomar, Hanesuna Lishma Hisiba Lahasi Hachaim. Those who give it for the right reasons is going to ultimately bring you life. Aval Hamaradef Im Hatzdaka. This is fascinating. If somebody chases after evil with tzedakah, Aval Hamaradef Im Hatzdaka Eshara Laramos Baas Habrios, to trick everybody else. Meaning what? Leman yachazikuhu letzadik, so that other people will think he's a tzadik. You give charity so that other people think you're a good person. He owed siba lemoso, that's also going to lead to their death. Ki lo techshav leschus kim lechova. That won't actually work out for you to your merit, but rather to your detriment. Meaning, sincere charity. This, Metzudas David, is problematic for another Gemara that we just did in Daf Yomi. Let's see, Michael, Leonard, those are the Daf Yomi crew that are on here right now, at least. Oh, Evan's here. And the Evan's video is off, so I didn't see him. But I forgot what Daf it was. I think it was Sunday's Daf. So I think Meir and Sarita are also for that Daf. The Gemara on Sunday said, is it not a mitzvah if you don't do things with the right intentions? Right, if you remember, this was about the doing bedikah inside the hole and getting, and being protected from kishuf while you're doing it. So what's the problem? Whatever. And the Gemara brings up a situation there. If a person says, pruta zulet staka kidesha yichya bini, if I, I'll give this money for charity so that my son will live. Right, so the Gemara says, harezet tzadik gamor. Even though his intentions were really self-serving, so that his son will live, that tzedakah is still a good tzedakah. And we explained in the daf on Sunday, the reason for that would be because the person who you're giving the charity to still benefits from it. Right? They still benefit from that charity, even if your intentions aren't, the purest of intentions. However, and that would seem to fly in the face of this Mesudas David understanding this pasuk. The big difference, however, is that the Mesudas David understanding this pasuk, it's not just that a person's intention is insincere, or that it's for another purpose, but here it's for a deception, meaning that it is actually, it's actually lira'ah, as opposed to the pasuk says, mirade fra lemoso. You're using, according to Mitzvah 7, you're using the tzedakah as a trick to deceive people. So it's not just that you have intention for one good thing while you're doing another good thing, but it's actually that you're doing something bad with the good thing. So that's a little different from what we saw on Sunday, even though I can imagine someone having a discussion about that too. So here, this reminded me of a chapter in Give and Take, and I don't have my Give and Take with me. I'm in the office. So from Adam Grant, which you talked about. Yeah. Yeah, Leonard.
So you're saying this is worse than Shelo Lishma, Ba Lishma.
Yeah, exactly. And Tosos asks that question a number of places in Shas. When the Pasuk tells us, or when the Gemara tells us, I think Rebbe tells us, Rebbe Hudanasi says, you should always learn even lo lishma, because mitoch shelo lishma ba lishma. But in another place in Shas, the Gemara also tells us, I think also from Rebbe, that's part of the Kasha, that anyone who is osik b'tor shelo lishma, ra'i lo shelo nivra, better that they never lived. So which one is it? Is learning Torah lo lishma, meaning for the wrong reasons, is that something which is good because it's going to lead you to learn Torah for the right reasons? Or is learning Torah lo lishma bad because you're learning for the wrong reasons? Right? Both comments are found in the Gemara. So Tosfos always says there's a difference. There's a difference between one and the other. One is lekanter. If you're learning shelo lishma for bad reasons, right, in order to work against it, in order to make arguments against it, to use it as a weapon over other people, as a cudgel for other people, so then that's a bad reason to be lo lishma. That's a bad intention. If your intentions are neutral, you're just there for, because you're teaching, you're getting money for it, whatever. So hopefully that's a neutral thing that, has at least some positive aspects to it, to sustain yourself, whatever. And it's not necessarily using it for a bad thing. So same thing here. If the tzedakah that you're giving is for another, a purpose, it might not be a best purpose, but it's not the purest form of tzedakah, but it still works. However, here we're talking about the kind of tzedakah which is actually for a bad purpose, where you're doing it so that you can deceive others and make it look like you're so righteous. So this reminded me of a part in the book of Give and Take that I quoted the last couple of weeks. So I have to say Blin Eder now that it's the third week in a row we're quoting Adam Grant's book, Give and Take. But actually, it's our third class in a row, not third week in a row, because we had a class in between. Either way. But I don't have the book with me right now because I'm in the office. So this is from, I remembered it was in the book, so I just looked it up online. This is an article on a website called Psych Central, which talks about this concept. Adam Grant talks about the I don't know if this, I think this is his phrase, kissing up and kicking down, right? It's a way to spot a taker, right? We talked about give versus take versus match, right? So how do you have a fake taker, a fake giver? A fake giver is someone who gives charity but is faking it. So those types of people, one of the tells, one of the indicators of a fake giver is someone who always kisses up to their superiors but kicks down to their inferiors, right? If they're like a boss or something, they'll always talk to some, you know, hotshot in very glowing terms, but then anyone who's below them, they'll always, you know, demean and always degrade them. So in his powerful book, as I say, in powerful book, Give and Take, Adam Grant uses the Dutch phrase kissing up and kicking down to describe the behavior of takers. In Grant's words, although takers tend to be dominant and controlling with subordinates, they're surprisingly submissive and deferential towards superiors. Using the example of Ken Lay, trivia question, who was Ken Lay? CEO of Enron. CEO of Enron. Using the example of Ken Lay, best remembered as the primary villain in the Enron scandal, Grant relates that at one point, Lay asked 70 employees to pretend to be busy traders, right? It was a whole scheme. To pretend to be busy traders and to bring in personal family photos and to make fake phone calls in order to impress a group of Wall Street analysts. According to Grant, this is a hallmark of a taker, someone who is obsessed with making a good impression upward and less worried about how he is seen by those below him. That's a fake taker, someone who's using nice things towards other people in order to make themselves look good, right? You give them money to a building so that you can put your name on it, something like that, right? So, by the way, fascinating, Adam Grant goes through a fascinating back and forth, but among some of the I don't know if you call them journalists or investigators or whatever, trying to figure out what was the problem with Enron, and they're going through all the reports and they're trying to figure out how is it how did it tank so badly, how is it so unsuccessful and have so much loss that they had to cover it up, and the way that, if I remember correctly, the way that Adam Grant talks about Enron is he says that the answer is on the second page of their reports. And if you look at the second page of the reports, and I was listening to this on an audiobook, so I didn't see this, but he apparently has a picture of it in the audio, in the actual book. I have to look back at the book. I don't remember. I think it's there. And the second page of their reports is a big picture of Ken Lay. It's just one big, the whole page is just a picture of Ken Lay. It says that was the downfall of Enron. Because Ken Lay didn't care about the business or the people, he cared about himself. That was his way of categorizing that debacle. The Mishle Yud Aleph Chaf 11:20. I'm trying to get down to the bottom to 22. We'll see how we do the next couple of sukkim. I might just go through them. Toavas Hashem Ikshe Lev. Men of crooked mind are an abomination to Hashem. People who do things waywardly, Hashem doesn't like them. Or it's sono tamimei darech. What does Hashem want? What is his ratzon? Tamimei darech. Those who, this is weird, Safaria translates this as, but those whose way is blameless please him. That's weird. Not sure what that's based on. But typically tamimei darech means that they're simple, straight, right? Like Yaakov ish tam. They're sincere and authentic, whatever they're doing. Here in the art scroll it says, but his desire is for those whose way is wholehearted. That's probably more close to how I understood it. First, I just wanted to say over from the Rabbeinu Yonah, a fascinating phrase that we've seen distinctions within Mishle about these two groups of people. But when the Rabbeinu Yonah says this phrase, he says, Ritzono tumi mederech, Haim hashlemim b'midosam. These are people who are full or complete in their character. Min hatoldos o shehispu midosam lahanchosam achrei asecha. What does that mean? Whether it's through nature or nurture. Min hatoldos, from the fact that they were born that way, that they're good-natured people, they have a sincere, they're goody-goods, right? They always do the right thing. They're trying to be authentic people. Or because they learned it based on the wisdom of the Torah. Just or both as, both are just as good. That's an interesting line from Ravina Yonah. I couldn't really crack the code about how to understand that within this pasuk, so I'm not going to talk about it, but I just thought it was intriguing to bring up. The Metzudas David understands this a little differently. Ikshelev, what are those people that are crooked minds? Mar'el Adam Yoshro Umachshavos Libo Ikshos. They look like they're straight and narrow. They look like they're good people. They're just. But ultimately, their thoughts inside them, internally, are actually very wayward. Getting a bit of an echo here. I'm not sure why. Tamime Derech. What's Tamime Derech? On the flip side, Has Hatam Bidrachav. Someone who's simple in his ways. Umashva Misisro Linaglehu. Right? And he parallels, he equals out what's on the inside and what's on the outside. Tocho Kabaro, as the story goes in the Gemara. Hu Yiratzel Hashem. That's the type of person Hashem wants to be around. Notice, by the way, doesn't say anything about a person's tzidkus. What does Hashem want? Hashem wants a person who's honest. Hashem wants a person who's authentic. A person who their insides reflect their outside, or their outside reflects their inside. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're always right all the time, that you always do the right thing, but you're always honest about what you're doing and why you're doing it. Right? This pasuk says, Tavas Hashem ikshelev, people who, according to Mitzvos David, who are crooked of mind, who do one thing on the outside and say a different thing, mean a different thing on the inside. But Ritzono Tmimei Derech. Whatever Derech that is, this is my own personal nuance on the Pasuk, that it doesn't matter what the Derech is, Hashem wants people to be honest. Where do we learn this from? Next week's Parsha, right? Lo Yachlu Dabra Lo Shalom. The brothers couldn't talk to Yosef. They just didn't talk nicely to Yosef. Anytime they talked, it was critical. They just couldn't talk to him nicely. And Rashi says, Mitoch Genusam, you know, Shvachan, that from their ill-treating of Yosef, you also find a praise of them, which is that they didn't pretend to like him and then hate him behind closed doors, which is interesting take from Rashi, given that whole scene. Okay, Yad Liad Lo Yinaker. That also, by the way, is a seamless transition from the Ken Lay story and the pasuk from right beforehand, which talks about Cain Tzedakah, right? That it's sincere Tzedakah. Yad liad lo yinakera, that assuredly, I don't know why it says that, the evil man will not escape. Oh, yad liad. Rashi says it's from hand to hand. From his action to Hashem's action, it's going to be right away. Some people say this is the source for mida keneged mida. Yad liad. Whatever they do, that's what you're going to get in return. Not very clear. But lo yinakera, you will not escape the evil that's about to come to you. Vizera tzadikim nimlat. However, the descendants of the righteous will be able to escape. Meaning, if you did something wrong, it's going to be punished. The consequences will occur one way or another, in this world or the next world. But zera tzadikim, if you do the right thing, if you're a righteous person, even your descendants will be able to get away from possible punishment. Assuming that they're not also doing something wicked. But again, not talking about theodicy today. That's a little too deep. Nezem Zahav Va'af Chazir. It's an interesting one. Shlomo HaMelech uses the word Chazir, right? For those Dafyomi guys, you know, remember from last week, we talked about not using the word Chazir, and some have the Chumra to do so even today. But I remember I have a relative that doesn't have any pigs in their house. It's no stuffed animals, no books about pigs. Just, you know, it's a certain, you know, the fact that, similar to what we've been talking about, actually, I wonder if there's a connection here. The fact that the pig is, you know, shows the split hooves, but doesn't chew. It's cut on the inside, representative of a nasty person of some kind. So either way, Shlomo Melch uses the word explicitly. So, at least while we're saying the pasuk, we can say the word. Nezem zav ba'af chazir, a gold ring in the snout of a pig, is Isha Yafa Visaras Tam, is a beautiful woman bereft of sense. Here we go, first full circle tonight, back to a woman, that a gold ring on a pig is just like a beautiful woman who has no morality. Meaning that it could be that she's very beautiful, but it doesn't really do much good when it's on a pig, right? So this is actually a Mishnah in Avos uses this pasuk. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, b'chol yom v'yom bas k'yoses meharchori v'machrevizas v'omeres. Every single day, a heavenly voice comes out from Har Sinai and says, announces to everyone, Oy lehem labrios me'albono shel Torah. How terrible it is, woe to the people who are insulting the Torah. Shekol mi she'en osek b'Torah nigger nazif. Because anyone who doesn't learn Torah or is involved in the Torah is considered disgraced, rebuked, here it says, nazuf. We had that word in our Tochacha class, I think, in Pasuk of the Gemara in Erech. Shnemar, nezem zav ba'af chazir, isha yafa v'saras tam. Wait a second, what does that have to do with this? Right? Anyone who doesn't learn Torah, it's insulting. Or it's insulting to the Torah when you don't learn Torah. And now, how do you know? Because the Pasuk says, like a gold ring on a pig. What? What does that mean, a gold ring on a pig? What does that have to do with what we're talking about? You're talking about people who don't learn. So I heard once of Art about this. How does one lead to the other? Because the gold ring on a pig means you have a gold ring. You have the opportunity to learn. You're not busy all the time. You have a little time in the morning before you go to work. You have a little time after you come back from work. You have times in your day, maybe during lunch, where you could do a little bit of learning. That's a golden opportunity. And what are you doing? You're putting it on a pig. You're taking that gold ring and you're taking that golden opportunity and you're using it for something else. You're using it to gossip. You're using it to eat more food, to snack more, to watch television, whatever it is. You have to take the opportunity you have to do the right things in those times. Obviously, you have to relax and whatever for mental health. There are other things to consider. But if you have the opportunity, you have the golden ring, where are you going to put that golden ring? You're going to put that golden opportunity on a pig? Or are you going to put it on a person that can actually make it more beautiful? Exactly what the analogy would be, I'm not sure. But that's what it's saying here from the Pasuk in Mishlei, that you have beauty. The same way you have beauty, and you can use that beauty. You're right. Isha Yiras Hashem Hitesal, the Gra says at the end of Eshes Chaya, we'll talk about this in forever from now, as I started the class, right? Right, does it say? What does it say at the end of Eshes Chaya? It's Sheker Hachain, right? Sheker Hachain Vehevel Yofi, right? False is beauty, false is charm, and futile is beauty. Isha Yiras Hashem Hitisala. A woman who is fearful of heaven is praised. Asks the girl, what do you mean? Hitisala. Isha Yiras Hashem Tisala. A woman who's fearful of Hashem should be praised. Says the girl, no, the word he is a reference back to the beauty. Sheker Hachen Vehevel Ayofi. Yofi is Hevel, but Isha Yiras Hashem, so he, the Yofi, is Tisala. If the woman who's beautiful is also a Yari Shamayim, if the woman who's beautiful is also someone who lives with a certain moral compass, so then tis halal. Then she can be praised not just for her Yari Shamayim, but also for her beauty. Because it's not a gold ring on a pig. It's a gold ring on something beautiful. So too says the Mishnah Novos, Rabbi Shua ben Levi, person has the opportunity to learn, you have the golden opportunity, make sure you make the most of it, put it on something beautiful, put it into your learning. Don't put it into other avenues that you don't need to do right now or that are particularly indulgent in your desires. And that's what it means. Also, beauty, we see this, by the way, if you want an unbelievable Mara Malkum for those who are looking for Mara Malkums that sound just like that, from that Gra. So you should look, I believe it's the Radak on last week's Parsha. I didn't look at it this year. I don't think I have it here. Wrong Chumash. But I believe the Radak talks about beauty and why all the Imalos are beautiful on last week's Parsha when it says that Rachel was beautiful. Rachel Hayisai Yifas Toar. I believe he says it over there, that beauty is something Hashem put into the world for the sake of using it properly, for the sake of the extension of righteousness. He gives the avos beautiful wives so that they have more children, so that they are respected people or people that people look up to for different things, and through that they can further their righteousness in the world. Interesting stuff, but nonetheless, we got to cut it off there. Yeah, Leonard.
Yeah, how do you reconcile the pasuk that you started the shir with at the beginning, where pain seems to be the good thing. Sheker hachin.
Good. It's a good question, and you'd be able to reconcile it with that gra, that sheker hachin, right? That it is false. The chain is false if you don't have a woman who is Isha Yiras Hashem. Isha Yiras Hashem makes he tisalel, makes the chain praiseworthy. So here, at least according to the Surah Zav we quoted before, Isha Schein is Isha Hanose Schein Bavor Kishron Maaseah. So she has that chain as a good chain, because that chain is based on her good deeds. Other types of chain, you'd be right. At least the way that Mesudas David interprets that pasuk, especially given the contrast to the end of the pasuk, the aritim yisbuch osher, so then we know that that chen is the good kind of chen. Chen is not independently always bad. It depends on the type of chen. I think Michael was trying to say something and he just logged off. I don't know. I'm about to log off, so I hope he comes back in the next 5 seconds, because that's all I got for tonight. Mirtz Hashem will continue next week on the discussion of Mishle. Not sure what's going on there, but stay tuned for more next week. Mirtz Hashem, thanks for coming. And everyone, thank you for the Saznis for sponsoring Le'iloi Nishmas Zalman Sazni. Hopefully his soul has a elevation through our learning tonight. Yes. What are you trying to say, Sarita? Shkayach, everyone. I'll talk about this offline.